Welcome to the Alt Animation Podcast, a podcast that talks about the saltier side of the animation industry. I'm Josh Ryan.
And I'm Robert Orndorff.
Well, the next couple episodes are going to be really cool. We have kind of a South by Southwest theme going. We got a bunch of interviews from really cool animators, and, you know, I guess it's kind of going to be the overlying theme. So we're just going to talk a little bit about, South by recap. Yeah. I don't know, you think we should kind of talk about South by the rest of them? We'll probably just do South by interviews.
We should do the planning before the
yeah,
episode.
Yeah, good call.
Which we totally did, but you're...
It's transparency. This is transparency. People like it nowadays. It's a buzzword. Well, so we've got some really cool interviews with a bunch of the animators that actually, you know, that made films for South by Southwest. But we got a really cool one. One of my personal heroes, the Grayscale Gorilla.
Yes.
Nick Campbell, yeah. He is an awesome motion graphics artist, and he's a very inspirational person in terms of... You know, because a lot of animators work on their own, and no one really tells you how to, you know, manage your life and manage your time and manage your finances. And he kind of made that his thing of, like, helping other people out, you know, and, like, trying to help people stay motivated. So you should check out his site, man.
Yeah.
And so, and you're learning After Effects, too, or you're wanting to learn After Effects. You should do one of his five-second challenges where he gives you a theme, and you basically just make an animation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of, give an example of a theme.
Like the last one that I did was the theme was straight line. So it's
straight line.
You can do whatever you want with it. And some people have a lot of fun with it. Some people make stuff that's really cool. Some people make even like a character animation, but it's just 5 seconds long. And the main purpose of it is to just have cool stuff for your demo reel, because a lot of people don't really get to work on, you know, a lot of cool projects. So this is a great way. And, you know, a lot of people think, oh, I need to make like a 30-second thing or a minute-long thing, when really for your demo reel, all you need is 5 seconds. So
that's true.
Make that 5 seconds really cool, and next thing you know, you've got something awesome for your reel. You can put it at the very beginning, and it took you a lot less time than maybe even, like, you know, one of your more high-profile projects.
Good point. I'll do that.
Well, okay, I mean, we kind of built up the South by Southwest thing. There isn't much to recap, really. I mean... Overall, I did get the flu.
This guy got the flu.
I got the flu walking
hard.
Around.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's... If you guys haven't been to South by Southwest, I highly recommend you go, just because...
I recommend you get some sleep in the days ahead of time, though, rather than...
Hibernate beforehand.
Yourself out, and then start a festival.
Well, and the cool thing about it is it... I don't know, it reminds me kind of like Mardi Gras, or, you know, one of those really cool events.
Well, I mean, it's 6th Street, you're downtown, you're walking
around. Yeah, it's mainly like, there's a huge party side of it, fun, you know, exciting
music. I'm
pretty
sure I saw Robert Plant while I was down there.
You probably did. I saw Jared Leto, which isn't nearly as cool. But...
I found out my old place in Hyde Park was only like 2 blocks from where Robert Plant bought a house just for chilling during South by Southwest.
Very cool,
man. Is that crazy?
That's really crazy.
But not related to animation, let's...
You should have stayed there. We should look and see if Robert Plant has any cool animated music videos from his new stuff.
I feel like I would know, and I feel like the answer is no.
Yeah. Well, anyways, back to South by Southwest. If you guys get a chance to go, I highly recommend, because it's a really fun party environment, because you have the whole music side of it, but you also have the interactive and film. So there's like this underlying, you know, really cool... thing behind it that is kind of fueling this whole party, which, you know, I got to go to a couple panels, and, you know, looking over, some guy's like typing on his iPad about who to cast in his next movie, and they're like talking about Rosario Dawson and like all these famous people, you know, and like hearing this one guy, just a bunch of California people.
It has
down.
An energy.
Yeah.
The whole festival has an energy.
A lot of people schmoozing, a lot of people passing business cards around, but the really cool part for animation is the interactive side, because, you know, there's so much... everyone thinks of animation, you know, cartoons, Disney, Pixar, all that kind of thing. But really, in the future, a lot of it is going to be UI design, programming, you know, all that. They need animation, and they need it to look cool, and they need it to look sleek, and or whatever the project is, apps and all that stuff.
Once you've been to a few South by interactives, you kind of realize that that's the trend, you know, that things are heading.
I mean, and a lot of the best... Or not best, but a lot of really cool new tech has kind of not been developed there or anything like that, but kind of been tested and shown off there, and gets its wings. It's pretty cool. And then, of course, you have the whole animated side of the festival, which, you know, are really good shorts.
Well-programmed.
Yeah.
I want to say well-programmed this time. The animated shorts were a really nice collection with some underlying motifs, definitely, and then some. So there was a nice sort of wholeness to it, but there was also a lot of variety, and then a few that were just almost intentionally out, like they almost had made a rule for themselves and then intentionally broke it, which was cool. Yeah. You know, yeah.
Well, I would agree with you on that for sure. You know, there was some that were just visually amazing. The story was amazing, and there were some that were just a little bit more ridiculous. Which, you know, they all have their place. And that must be the weird part or the hard part about, you know, programming a festival, because I'm sure you could just pick all the best produced and best animated and all these really cool stories, but you gotta break it up a little bit, you know? Like, you gotta throw in the kind of lower budget or fun or, you know, less intense or just kind of whimsical ones.
Yeah, I mean, I what I love about shorts programs, a good shorts program makes your mind and your heart, perhaps, go up, down, left, right. You know, it's like the Wonka Vader at the end of Willy Wonka. The elevators go up and down. This goes front ways and back ways and side. And like it, you just go. Your brain goes so many different places so quickly in a shorts festival.
It's almost like creating an entire, I guess, movie using clips. Like you're, it's like you're an editor and you're editing together these clips to make like an overlying theme and like an emotional arc with, you know, actual short films within themselves. True. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since I've been watching Battlestar Galactica, it's almost like the fleet of Battlestar Galactica itself is like one big ship.
You're going to, in 2 weeks, when you're done with Battlestar, you're going to hear yourself say this again, and you're going to be like, why did I say that?
Well, you know, that
He's in the throes. He's in the grips of Battlestar.
I'm barely watching Battlestar Galactica.
Barely watching you. I haven't been able to get a hold of you for days.
Well, no, I'm saying barely now. Like I just barely started watching it. I know it's barely, everyone else.
You're barely in season four. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Everyone else has already seen it.
You're just now, is what you mean.
So, anyways, this away from Battlestar Galactica. we'll jump away from that. We have Kelly Sears, the interview today is Kelly Sears, Once It Started, It Could Not End Otherwise, and Evan Vieira, who did Caldera. Those two, we did an interview with them.
Yeah, it was really cool. We kind of walked out of the showcase and grabbed whoever we could as we were walking out in between, you know, photographers wanting to take pictures and stuff, and they were super nice. They were super cool. They were like, hey, yeah, we'll definitely do an interview.
Well, talking about transparency earlier with the podcast, I don't know. I guess we kind of let people in on it every once in a while, but like to try and get an interview. Well, first off, because of the podcast, we got a badge that's basic, which reminds me, man, we got to, we'll talk about this later, but they're
transparency.
They're making sure they send us an email that's saying, hey, send us your coverage because we want to make sure you actually covered the event,
because
if we give you a press badge, we want to make sure that you're covering it. So we got to make sure and send them this, or else we might not get it again next year.
No, fair enough.
Yeah, so there's a crazy, you know, everyone's in town, like the whole city shuts down. You have a very short amount of time to, like, do everything. Like, if you buy a badge or if you get a badge, it's almost impossible to see everything you want to see. And trying to coordinate interviews with people and, like, figuring out when to meet and all that stuff. It's so crazy. But if you guys get a chance to go to South by Southwest, I highly recommend it. But, yeah, we basically grabbed these guys. We had emailed everyone before and tried to get everyone's...
it's difficult, though. You know, and
so we didn't get to interview everybody. Mm-hmm. I wanted to. I really did. And, you know, hopefully we're going to still be able to interview some people over Skype later on.
Yeah.
Some of the filmmakers. But, if you're a filmmaker that didn't get interviewed, I highly apologize, or I sincerely apologize. But
imagine,
you know,
if you hadn't gotten completely, like, almost dead during South by. Imagine
that been
you
cool.
might have gotten, like, maybe everybody. All but one. Yeah.
Well, some people didn't get back to me, like, you know, of course, like Bill Plimpton, you know, he's too.
Well, yeah, that's right.
I don't think he was even there.
They had a Bill Plimpton. Yeah, I don't think he was either.
Yeah, he's too important.
I think we would have heard if he was there.
But anyways, one of the guys we're interviewing, Evan Vieira, I mean, both of their films are really cool. I enjoyed Kelly Sears' one we saw at the Austin Film Festival. We talk about it a little bit in the interview. And, of course, Caldera
was really
cool. Well, we didn't
see the one that was at South by. She had a different
one. Yeah, it was a different one. We talk about that in the interview.
Yeah, but she's been on the circuit. She's been to Austin before.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Evan Vieira, he has a really cool story how he did a Kickstarter campaign, and actually, which you hardly ever hear that it actually goes through
and people
you know, reach their goal, which is really cool for animation. It's awesome to see that system working how it's supposed to work.
And this was his first project too, which
which was amazing and really well done.
He seemed like very. I wouldn't have guessed this was his first. He had a knowledge and a confidence.
But he also had that humbleness and that you could see that he was excited to be there.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's true.
But he definitely knew what he was doing, of course, and it shows with the film, and of course with Kelly Sears too, which she was telling us, and you'll hear in the interview that she has a really cool system for, you know, getting her films out, which is cool to see the other end of the spectrum working where. People can actually make money. They're getting funded privately, or not privately, but by the public, and they're getting it out to the public, which you never really got to do with short films before. Now we have all these really cool programs. And another thing I was wanting to tell you too is that I talked to a lot of the people we interviewed. I'm not going to say who or how or when, but they were saying that like Liquid Television or all these short online programs and things and festivals and stuff. Are buying their films.
Yeah.
Which is really cool to see, especially for short films and animated ones in particular, that they're actually getting some kind of compensation, but not so much that reaching a wider audience.
You know, there's no one to call it. It's such a... The culture has no leader. The culture of animation, and specifically short film animation. So there's no one to call it and make it official, and there's no like animation.
Well, Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Well, no, like here, I was like about to like argue with you without even, and then you said, no, there's no like official voice of what's happening in the world of animation, specifically short animations right now. Do you feel like
the Altimation podcast?
Do you feel like we're in a bit of a not necessarily a golden age, but certainly a time to be admired as far as the volume and the variety of what's out there. Like,
oh, certainly.
No one, I don't think any, there isn't the consciousness to say we really should appreciate right now.
I think there is a little bit of that.
Yeah.
You know what I think it is really is that who knows what the future is going to be. It might like totally not be sustainable.
True.
But we're in that middle period of where we've been and where we're going, and the possibilities and the hope for it to be what we want it to be are really, you know, like, exciting.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are trying to push and get stuff out there and, like, be that guy, and the time really hasn't gone by long enough for us to see what's really going to happen. Like, YouTube has really only been around for, like, 5 years. Vimeo, popular, you know, like, popular Vimeo videos really only been around for a couple years.
Yeah.
And all
and
these things are tests.
Is a subjective thing too. I mean, like you and I, obviously huge fans of Vimeo. Other animators know Vimeo.
Yeah.
But
the general public,
yeah, exactly.
yeah.
But even still, like what I'm saying is, even with it only being a limited population, it's still the right people. You know what I mean? There's still this exchange going on of stuff, of ideas, and of short films. People are seeing. People are able to see. We talk about it in the interview. Kelly Sears mentions the bonus of watching a film in a theater.
In a theater, yeah.
And not only that, there's a different culture in each town she goes to. There's a different reaction.
Yeah.
There's a different and
this is something we've
great.
Talked about on the podcast. You know,
you're right. But just that. Yeah, you're right. The duality of...
Well, it's a running theme. It's a running theme that we like to discuss because it's something that, you know, a lot of people are just wanting to jump on, like, this new thing. That, oh, this is the new technology. This is a new way of doing things. And if you're the type of person, like a filmmaker or a content creator, you want to be riding that, you know, that new wave, or you want to be the new guy that's kind of, like, coming out with a new thing. And people really need to slow down and look at what we're losing, you know? Like, because there's all these kind of really new, cool ways to see them, but... Are we losing the old ways? Do we need to slow down and think about it?
True, but at the same time, I feel like, and I don't want to call it a golden age, but whatever sort of, and I don't want to call it a renaissance either, but in the and I don't want to call it an explosion, I don't know what word to use, but in the period we're in right now, where there's more available, it is because you can get it out. It's because there's that sacrifice of, not everyone's trying to fit... there's more films than can be crammed into all of the festivals. Yeah. And finally, there's a place for them to overflow to, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then the fact that there's still demand for it, you know, there's not an overlay of supply, which is, you know, pretty cool, man. It's, it's a really cool thing. And that kind of brings me to one thing I wanted to talk about a little bit, not that much, but like, Cartoon Brew has a post about how to make money making short films online, like kind of using YouTube, which is pretty cool. They're like, you know, they break down how people get revenue with the revenue sharing process on YouTube, which is relatively new,
right,
and how much some people should be making. And then some of the filmmakers commented on the post and said, no, I don't make anything close to that, or I make a little bit more in this area. So if you guys haven't seen that Cartoon Brew post, check it out, because it's really enlightening. And like, it's exciting to see how much some of these guys make, but then at the same time, you realize they're not making that much.
Right.
And
I'm telling you, though, the t-shirt sales, that's the sweetest plum.
Right there. Well, and so like David O'Reilly.
Yeah.
I've been trying, and if you guys don't know who David O'Reilly is, he's kind of the rock star animator now. He's making all these really cool short films and like has been working on a bunch of really awesome projects. And I've been trying to get him to do the podcast, and I kind of mentioned to him about 3D printing, because he has very low poly models that'd be perfect to print out, and people love his stuff. Like, he's the guy who did the Octocat video, which, you know, if you guys haven't seen that or heard that story, it's a really cool story. I'm not going to say it, because if he's on the podcast, we'll let him tell it. But he's been getting into 3D printing, which I hoped it would be for his characters, because he could sell them.
Right.
And there'd be no overhead with that. And we talked about...
You know, like, I don't know if you can just say... Like, I've heard the whole, there's no overhead thing before, and yet there was...
Be careful, because they were a sponsor on our podcast.
Well, no, I know. I'm just speaking in general, really. Backpedal, backpedal, backpedal.
Well, now, but the process, there really is no overhead for you. That's the cool thing about it. But anyways...
Just saying, it's almost like... like you were saying, like I'm sure there's other costs.
But David O'Reilly, being the type of guy he is, as opposed to making his own characters, he just modeled Walt Disney with a gigantic sexual organ wrapped around his shoulder and printed that out. So, if you guys saw that Walt Disney that he made, I take a little credit for it, because I told him about 3D printing. I'm just kidding. Yeah. But anyways, back to South by Southwest.
Okay, fine. That's fine.
Some of the cool highlights was they premiered the Yellow Submarine, the Beatles movie, the animated movie. They digitally restored it, made it look amazing, and they showed it to Paramount, which was really cool.
Thank God they didn't add, like, new characters and make it 3D and maybe make a prequel. And...
Yeah, Ringo shot first in this.
Nice! Nice!
Yeah. And, oh man, one of my favorite things I got to see was the cast of Bob's Burgers, which, you know, it's not so much... animators, but you know, they're really funny cast. They did a comedy set, which is really unique, you know, to have. I don't know, I guess like the Simpsons, they have an awesome cast of really funny comedians.
Yes.
But Bob's Burgers is very new, you know, it's very contemporary. Which I think a lot more people should watch the show. I think it's funny, and I, you know, it has a pretty big following, especially like, you know, the guy who makes Adventure Time, he loves it. A bunch of other people really like it. But the cast is just genuinely funny, and I'm sure that they pitch ideas all the time, and it was really cool to see them live. And one of the highlights was, in between their comedy sets, they showed a couple clips from the new Bob's Burgers that was premiering that night, but Fox sent them the video with the animation direction still on top of it.
Oh, yeah, 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 I heard about
that. Which was really, I think I was the only one that actually enjoyed it, because everyone else, like, they were like, ah, that's funny, you know, like, it's goofy that they do that, but I was genuinely interested to see how they did that. So basically what they do is a guy just in between, and it really gives you an insight to the animation process, how it's so pose to pose, because the minute someone says something in between the dialogue, that's when they move. And that's when you hear the Fox guy saying, like, she gives him the box right in between when she's saying something. So it's like, here you go, she gives him the box, how are you doing? And it was really weird, but also really interesting to see. And of course, everyone got a kick out of it.
Right.
And, you know, I think I was one of the only ones that actually, like, learned something from it.
Right.
But if you guys get a chance to see probably any of the cast members do comedy, they're hilarious. So
I was going to say, you probably weren't the only animator in the crowd.
You know, I don't know, man. Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
I definitely didn't see any. Or anybody that was, like, excited about it.
Yeah, I have noticed, like, I mean, I don't know if people know, I'm not an animator, but you definitely are, and, like, I think animators can sense other...
They're gonna revolt against you now.
Are they?
Yeah.
That's fine. I'll, I'll be the Judas of the show.
The Cylon.
Oh my god, man, stop.
I'm on a roll. Okay. No,
you're on an obsession. It's,
yeah.
It's just but, all movie. Well, no, I was going to say, let me finish, man.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, okay. I was just going to say, I've noticed, this is just a comment on animators, seems like you guys have like a sense of each other in a crowd. Like, I've been to conventions that were, well, I've been to conventions that were mostly animators, and I was sort of the odd man out, but then I've also been to stuff with you where there are other animators sprinkled in, and, like, you have a pretty good sense of, like, but I mean, I think a lot of it is dress and like attitude.
And the way
do you remember when we went to that job fair and like we were the only one? I know, I was like, I looked like I was there for a job fair.
Well, those weren't animators though; those were programmers.
You're right, but there was one or two other people. I feel like who
there might have been some artists. Yeah. Well, on behalf of all animators, I think we can all agree that you are a what is it? Honorary animator.
I'm an honorary yes. Ewok.
We'll give you we'll give you what's those fake degrees that they give people? An honorary degree.
An honorary degree.
We'll give you an honorary animation degree, yes. And you can be one of us. But I'm
the Dr. Phil of animation.
I guess to wrap up the whole South by Southwest thing, though, mm-hmm. the winner was Notes on Biology, which was the one with the elephant robot elephant, which. I like it. I think it's really good.
Strikes me as a crowd favorite.
Yeah, I saw it at the Ottawa Animation Festival, too. And it's just, people really like it. It's the one where a guy, it's kind of it's pixelation at first.
Well,
so it's
I don't think
moving.
You have to tell them. I mean, they're listening online right now. They could just pop it up if they wanted to.
Yeah, check it out, Notes on Biology. And honestly, if a lot of these aren't out yet online, because, of course, there's still deals to sell them. But if you guys get a chance to watch any of the South by Southwest ones, they're all really, really well done, really mm-hmm. good. And, you know, South by Southwest is becoming more and more of a prestigious film festival in the world community. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but the U.S. still doesn't have a dedicated animation festival. And I think
Red Stick?
The one in Louisiana?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's more or less like a student one, you know? It's not like a full-blown deal, you know? It's not.
No, yeah,
people don't
right.
know about it outside
people
of
don't go nuts over any specific festival.
Yeah. But, you know, I think
and
South
it's kind
by,
of regional, you're right.
And especially for our region, though, like, South By is, I think, one of the bigger ones, so it's if you guys get a chance to submit and get into South By, do it. Make
it
a
already,
film for it.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and then you guys can fly out to Austin, hang out with me and Robert, and we'll show
you
around.
We'll drive you around places.
Yeah, we'll show you all the cool stuff. One of the interviews that we did with one of the animators was in front of the Daniel Johnston frog. So if you guys ever want to check out the Daniel Johnston mural that he painted of the frog, that'll be cool. And then Austin's just a great town in general, especially to be creative, and especially during South by Southwest. Sixth Street turns into a crazy, crazy place.
Yes, it does.
Not even just Sixth Street, all downtown. Mm-hmm. They just shut it down, and it's full of creative, exciting people, and, you know, everyone's talking, everyone's sharing information, sharing business cards, you know, making deals, schmoozing, connecting. So check it out, and I hope you guys enjoy our South by.
Being jerks from out of town.
No, yeah, and then you'll probably end up wanting to stay in Austin and live here and gentrify East Austin like me.
Which is fine, because then we can all sit around and laugh at the other people who haven't moved to Austin yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess that wraps up our kind of South by Southwest. I mean, was there anything else you wanted to talk about? There was no other big animation news, I think, other than that.
No, yeah.
That I can
I'm
think
good.
Of, at least.
I'm spent.
Yeah. Well, all right. I hope you guys enjoy our first interview in the South by Southwest recap. And if you guys have any questions, you know, let us know on Facebook or email us and follow us on Twitter.
Yeah, one more time, it's Evan Vieira with he did Caldera, and Kelly Sears with Once It Started, It Could Not End Otherwise.
And actually, before we do that, I just also wanted to say that Andrew Augustine, a friend of ours, worked with him. He is doing a Kickstarter campaign for his new game, Notion Games. He came out with one just a little while ago called Up Up Ubi. That's really fun and cool. So if you guys get a chance, check that out. Help them out if you guys feel compelled to. Also, make sure and remember to listen after the interview for the Cell Therapy segment hosted by Kevin Cooper. This time he's talking about The Legend of Korra. If you're a fan of the Avatar cartoon, which you probably aren't a fan of the Avatar movie if you are, don't watch the movie. Watch the cartoon if you haven't seen it. But he talks about the new kind of spin-off series called Legend of Korra, which the animation community and myself personally am very excited about. So thank you, Kevin. Make sure and follow Kevin on Twitter I think it's at Cell Therapy, or you can go to his blog or his email and just let him know that you're listening and that you're enjoying his segments, because I know I do. Also, I apologize for some of the audio quality on these interviews. It was South by Southwest, so we kind of had crowds everywhere, and we had to do a lot of them outside. So there's a little bit of background noise on some more than others. But if you listen hard, you can still get what the animators you're talking about. So we apologize for the quality, but all the content and the good stuff is all still there. So definitely stick through it and listen. And sometimes if it gets bad and you don't want to hear it, maybe skip ahead a couple minutes or something, it gets better.
Yo, wrap it up, B.
And that'll wrap it up. Enjoy the interview.
All right. Cool. Well, if you guys want to start off by just saying your names and your films, you can go first.
My name's Kelly Sears, and my film is Once It Started, It Could Not End Otherwise.
My name's Evan Veer. My film is Caldera.
All right. So how is South by Southwest going for you guys? Have you been enjoying it so far?
So far, so awesome.
Yeah, it's been incredible.
And you guys were... You met each other in school, or you didn't?
We met each other right after the screening.
Yeah.
Okay. What's going on?
You're yeah, we just met, although we've been like communicating through email. We're both Hampshire alums.
Okay. Cool deal. So is the animation program there pretty cool? Or?
I came out of the experimental film program there, and after college I stopped making 16mm film, but still wanted to work with my hands and have a very kind of hands-on practice, so I ended up working with found images from books from thrift stores, library sales, garage sales, flea markets.
And I'm pretty sure that it was, I think, a year ago that your other film was at the Austin Film Festival. So this isn't your first festival, right?
No.
How many films have you had in the festival before? Is this your second?
It's my fourth.
Fourth, okay. And they're all kind of collage stop motion, right?
Yeah, there's always an element that is done kind of traditional stop motion, and there's always a kind of techie, nerdy compositing element, so it has a foot in each area.
I really enjoy that on, especially, what was the first one called? It was The Line.
Voice on the Line.
Voice on the Line. It adds a whole lot. I really like, you know, the actual images versus the background pictures, you know, that are computer composited over. I don't know.
No, it's pretty refreshing too when it's just something different enough that when you have at a short film program, you know, it sticks out.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Caldera, full 3D animated, huge production. How many people were on that?
We had a crew total of 30, which is probably, I mean, it's a lot more than we would have had we had proper funding. Basically, the film was produced at Hampshire College. I was an invited artist, as was Chris Bishop, who was my co-writer and animation supervisor. And so we worked with a lot of students. And so those students were only able to give, you know, part-time, basically one class's worth of work. So we had a really large crew. And yeah, it maxed at about 30. That wasn't like consecutive at once, though. It was kind of like in different times, you know, because the different phases required different skill sets and different individuals to come on. So.
Well, it ended up awesome. The art style and the lighting was one of the things that really stood out. I love the way that, you know, when the turtle came up, the light was kind of, I don't know, was there a lot of storyboarding in terms of that? Like, do you guys do art boards and you know, color boards and things like that?
Yeah. Basically, the film was made before we even came to Hampshire. Bishop drew all the storyboards, and I had done all the concept art, and we decided that before we started production, we wanted to, like, you know, iron out every single shot and know what was going to be in the film so we didn't waste any time. And probably about... 25% of the boards drawn is what ended up in the film because we did so many iterations. So yeah, it was all planned out, and there's a lot of concept art that was done to sort of establish the aesthetic.
Okay. Now this is a question for the both of you. Now the internet is kind of the place where most people go to watch things. What's the benefit of submitting a film to a festival? I mean, what do you get out of that versus putting it online?
I think there are so many ways to see things. My favorite way for audiences to see something is in a festival, because you have the seats, you're sitting down at the beginning, the lights are down, the sound is good. When I watch something on a computer, I'm a very bad computer watcher, where iTunes might be going in the background and my overhead lights are on, and so it's not as focused as an experience. And I think there's something you know, really about the scale of cinema, where you the screen is so big and the sound is so full that you really get immersed in the piece.
Yeah, I mean, I would just echo that. This is actually the first festival. This is our world premiere, and so this is my first film out of school and first showing. So I feel like I'm still new to knowing what all these advantages are. But from the audience perspective, I would definitely say it's like having them seeing the film as it was intended. You know, it's like when people watch it on little flip phones or whatever. It's just, you know, 75% is lost, you know, the cinematic experience. So.
And there's also something really collective about going to a festival and seeing, you can feel how people are reacting to the film when they're watching it. You can hear kind of laughs, or you can kind of feel people being into it at certain points, and that's something that you would never get, that, you know, it really spreads, that the person next to you is experiencing film in a certain way. It's very contagious. And so there's something really nice about kind of feeling how an audience is growing together during the piece.
So after having a couple films in a festival, do you pull, you know, from the audience? Do you see what they like and don't like and then make decisions off of that? Or is it more just make it and then see what happens?
No, make it and see what happens. It's just interesting to see how different audiences, you know, sometimes the films I make are walk a line between being dark and dark comedies in some way. And so there's different festivals will have different volumes. Like sometimes people laugh a lot during films. Sometimes you can feel people being very tense during films. But I think that's interesting. The same piece can play in so many different ways.
Have you noticed that certain cities laugh or don't laugh more than others?
Yes, but I can't tell you which ones are.
Well, you were kind of talking about one thing earlier, you know, having it in a festival and having them play, all these films play together, there is kind of a running theme sometimes that wasn't planned.
I don't know if it was, but I'm starting to wonder if it was planned. There was like a motif of water, seemed like, in all of the... We haven't had a chance to ask the programmer if that was intentional.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a lot of oceans.
Yeah.
And also, there were a number of times when I thought Caldera was going to start, because a lot of films started the same with the same sound cue, which is wind blowing.
Right.
And I was like, you know, my buddies came, haven't seen me, I've been kept in the dark, and so I was, you know, nudging, I was like, here it comes. I'm like, oh, I don't even know the start of my own film. Yeah.
So with all these alternative outlets for films nowadays, online and, you know, whatever, do you guys have any in-game or any, what's the future of your films? Are you going to try to get them out anywhere else, or are you just going to move on to the next one?
Both. Films have a great run at a festival for maybe a year and a half, and then, you know, then hopefully you have a new film coming along. But there's a group that I'm doing distribution with in London for shorts. But here, not so much. There's not that much of a shorts market in the States. But in Europe, there's much more of a place where you can plug shorts in.
So it'll be like a compilation of shorts that they buy yours, basically, and put it in that, or...?
They kind of... And they program mine, and we split the...
Okay.
We split the...
Very cool.
Piece. But I just... You know, I think there's so many ways people can go about it. They can be very strict with, you know, they can hold on to things. There's so many different economic models out there. Some people will sell theirs as art pieces for a lot of money. I want everyone to see it. I don't care how they see it. I want people to see it in festivals. Not every place has a festival, so I'm now finding the group that I'm working with will host them as well, as a place
very cool.
to kind of contextualize it within a short film channel online.
Very cool.
And it's, you know, it's, people can watch it.
Yeah, that's
share
the point
the
of it, right? Yeah. Any plans for after this? What are you gonna do with it?
I mean, to be fully honest, I don't really know. You know, this is the beginning, and I am looking to other filmmakers to like ask the advice of. But yeah, I guess just basically see how it evolves organically and follow that direction.
And that's something crucial about coming to film festivals, because then you start meeting people, and it's really amazing how the universe is really kind to work, and you'll meet people and they'll help you spread it around.
Well, and it's a pretty small community overall, and very tight-knit from what I can tell.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys kind of know each other somehow. Yeah.
No, it's true. I mean, yeah, the animation world is very small.
Well, and I'm curious, I wanted to ask, you know, being at South By, being at similar size or themed festivals, I'm sure it's like a high, you know, and then it... contrasting that would be all the time spent, the countless hours working, and just sort of that. I wonder, is that the reward, or what is the real motivation? You know, when you're sitting there doing it, or when you're planning on starting, What is the biggest thing for each of you that is the reason for doing it?
I'm going to answer for both of us because I think it's going to be a similar answer.
Yeah.
Animators are very happy spending many hours working on things. Like, it's like satisfies something.
Yeah.
Like, the order's right. You've constructed things and all these masks and mattings and layers are all lining up in a way and you're creating this visual world. And there's something about, it's two absolutely opposite ends of the spectrum. It's so great to show your work and to meet people and socialize for once. But there's something so satisfying about kind of pulling up.
Yeah, no, it's definitely true. I mean, a process for me, although it's sometimes torturous because, you know, it's so labor-intensive and something like this was such a big management beyond just producing, like, because it creates such a big group. But, yeah, the process itself is fulfilling enough for me, and I just really love it. I love just getting in there and creating a world from scratch. So that's, like, the real motivation. But this experience is, like, polar opposite to, like, my life in the last two years of making it, which has been sitting at a desk in front of a screen in a dark room with, like, a wake on tablet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so the two worlds are just, like, couldn't even be more similar and have their own unique rewards. But in the end, it is the work itself that motivates.
You kind of have to love the process because you can never love the final product. You can always go and fix it.
Yes.
And you know, after watching it, you can always tweak it, and the next one's always going to be better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you really have to enjoy that mundane. Well, not mundane, but...
But no, it is. I mean, there's a certain amount of monotony when you go in every day and you're just kind of, like, working the same shot.
Do you kind of lose... well, not the spark, but kind of the overall vision of it. Once you get into the minutia of making these, do you kind of lose the overall gist of it? The story you're trying to tell?
I'm always figuring out the story as I go along. So
okay.
It's kind of how it comes about that there is this, like, one little part of your brain that when you're doing something very kind of micro level, that the rest of your brain is kind of open to
So you kind of figure all that out on the way, huh?
I'll have an idea when I go into it, and then the materials that I work with actually start to dictate the flow of the piece.
That's really cool. It's like improvisational story writing almost.
It's very organic.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, personally, I would say that describes the phenomenon exactly. Like, I get lost. I mean, yeah, get lost all the time and just, like, kind of fighting a matte line or just, like, refining... you know, some little painting or some little detail that is so insignificant to the story that probably I'm or other very close members are going to see. And it's like, it's a constant battle of being able to know what is important to work on and what is not, you know, to kind of like focus on the broad strokes and focus on the things that communicate most to the audience, you know. And that's been a real struggle for me personally because I have like a tendency to like obsess and be a little like obsessive compulsive about things, and I'm learning to let go of that because I realize it's more of a hindrance than it is like, you know, an advantage. But yeah, I know a lot of animators, particularly like 3D animators that have that same phenomenon.
And it's a little bit of letting your team, you know, depending on them and trusting them to handle that level of minutiae, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly. That is definitely a big part of it.
Well, do you have anything else to ask?
I'll ask one more question. Not looking at the process or even the particular piece itself, but as animators, you know, showing your film, for example, in the post, after the films, the question and answer, you mentioned the inspiration for Caldera being having to do with psychotic episodes. Do you see your films having any role as, pardon me, as like a social change element, any kind of? Do you want people to walk away thinking about the world they live in, any of that stuff, or are you just happy to be animating and working on any particular project at any time?
You know, personally, I mean, since the story of Caldera comes from a very personal place, which is basically, you know, come through understanding my father who suffers with psychotic disorders, schizoaffective disorder, I wouldn't say it's so much, like some people I've spoken to in the past have sort of classified it as like a mental health activism, which rubs me the wrong way because it's not really that. For me, really, it's about trying to communicate my understanding of my father and the way he's sort of been torn in his life of seeing the world very, very differently and sort of like understanding the brilliance of his mind while also understanding how hard it is for him to fit in a very marginalizing society. And really, really, that's all I hope to communicate. I don't necessarily hope to to like start some big change because I don't really think I have the answers at all. I just want people who are not as familiar with the experience to just sort of just meditate on the piece and just see it over and maybe understand that mental health is much more complex thing than sometimes we make it out to be. And I personally believe that it is as much of a problem with society being so marginalizing and unaccepting as it is for the individual who's sick. So that's sort of my... Yeah,
I think you did a good job getting it out there. Yeah, I think that comes across.
Cool, man. That's great because I sometimes worry that people just, I don't know, it's like too abstract or something.
No, it was really cool. Yeah, it definitely made you think and made you almost want to be a little crazy yourself, which I think everybody is.
Yeah,
everybody's got that side of them.
Yeah. How did you want to answer that question?
Mine is, you know, this. I think this one is like kind of one of the more abstract ones that I've done. Where I when I was putting this together, is leaving a lot of space in the narrative devices for people to kind of fill in their own bits of the story. But it really came out of kind of researching. I started by finding a yearbook from 1974 and thinking that all the kids looked really freaked out and the candidates. And then, my work is usually a little bit documentary, a little bit fiction.
Yeah.
And the fiction, I think, destabilizes the documentary practice a lot, where you aren't really sure if this is what parts are fiction, which parts are history. And I hope that people actively think back and start thinking about, well, is this the actual history?
Yeah.
And start really questioning kind of historical narratives in general. And so I really try to find a place that, you know, by using... This piece is a little different. It was made from high school yearbooks, but usually I take kind of pop historical images from National Geographic, from Time Life, things that are produced by larger publication companies that trickle down, and then I end up making new stories with them that echo that history, but also kind of reflect back on it from the present moment that it's being made in. So on one hand, I want them to be some kind of weird narratives, but on the other hand, I hope people start to think about the conditions that produce those stories.
I think you did a good job of that as well, yeah. especially with your last film, too, you know, kind of you could see that, is it real? I don't know. And then it gets so crazy that it's like, oh, this is almost better than our reality.
There's a hilarious, and that one played at Marfa Film Festival, some guy was like, hey, when are they releasing those tapes? And I was like, no, I made that.
Yeah, you must have been so disappointed. You must have been so sad. This is The Drift you're talking about, right?
No, this is another one called Voice in the Line. Telephone operators trying to coax out possible seditious kind of impulses in the country, but they ended up through their vocal ranges being boosted, starting to elicit more kind of repressed sexual thoughts. So it becomes this kind of the phone system becomes its end.
Cool.
It's I don't know, both of them in the one today. It's like you kind of want to laugh, but at the same time you're not sure.
That's
you know.
Exactly. Yeah. If that's what you're feeling, then that's awesome, because that's what I kind of want you to be, destabilized in so many different ways, where you're not sure what's fictional or not. You're not sure if it's funny. You're not sure if it's.
It's a very interesting emotion you're trying to
unease
people.
No, I love that. I mean, so the first one I saw was Drift that Perry showed me. And I was just, what I was like so impressed by was, after watching it, I felt like I was really in your world, and it was so like haunting and spooky and so deep, but there was such little movement, just like the slowest panning and movement and shifting of things. And with like I thought the sound choices were just like perfect, and just for being so like minimal, like visually, it just felt so deep, and I just like was teasing that apart in my head, because like as my direction is animation, it's like, oh, you're gonna add so much visual life, you know, and so it's a very opposite approach to myself, and I don't know, I just really respect that minimalism.
Thanks, yeah,
I just think it's really awesome.
Watching your films together with other people's films, kind of like what you just described, do you feel like you get inspired and you find inspiration from other people's films that you're I guess
always.
Sort of in your peer group in a way?
Yeah, always. I mean, it's a great, going to festivals is great because you get to see work that you're not going to see. Yeah. You know, a lot of the stuff isn't online. You get to see what your peers are making. It's super important.
Yeah, totally.
Do you guys watch a lot of shorts online like all the time, or do you try to like wait for festivals, or I don't know?
I try to see a lot. I like to keep my like, you know, ear to the ground, know what's happening, and just kind of like learn from other people's successes.
And there's so much great stuff coming out every day, all the time. There's
kind of nuts.
It's so much.
It's crazy. There's a lot. There's a lot to digest.
It's hard to keep up with almost.
Oh, absolutely. It really is.
Well, I think you guys both did a great job.
Cool.
I hope to see you guys back at South by Southwest, hopefully in the future.
Yeah.
So too.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Hello, hello, and welcome. You are listening to Cell Therapy, where you get the help you need to satisfy your cartoon addiction. I'm Kevin, your host, and on this therapy session, we're going to talk about the premiere of Avatar: Legend of Korra. Now, this wasn't actually a network premiere. Nickelodeon did something different. They released the first two episodes online at KorraNation.com. That's KORRANation.com. And this was most likely due to the overwhelming response from the community. And the love for this show is incredible. I would even go so far as to say that it may have increased after the end of the original series. People have just been clawing and clawing for more news and information ever since they announced the new series over a year ago. You know, so I think it was a good look for Nickelodeon to release the first two episodes online. Now, before I go on, I should say this. I think that the original series, Avatar: The Last Airbender, is the greatest cartoon ever made. To me, there isn't even a close second. We're talking about an original idea, not based in film or comics, with an awesome story. Their use of elemental powers, now, that's not entirely original. I have seen other cartoons use this, but I will say that it is the most creative. It's really because of this cartoon that I got back into network animation. For a while, I checked out because I wasn't seeing a whole lot of stuff that impressed me. But from seeing Avatar for the first time, I said to myself, this is awesome. This is the stuff that great cartoons are made of. And I was hooked ever since. So I had to put that in there so you know where I'm coming from with my opinions. So on to the actual cartoon. The Legend of Korra starts 70 years after the end of The Last Airbender. The Avatar is born into the next kingdom in the cycle, which in this case is the Water Tribe. Korra, as a child, is already gifted with bending three out of the four elements, water, earth, and fire. The one element that she has to learn in this series is airbending. Tenzin is her teacher, and he's the son of Aang and Katara. So he's tasked with, you know, being that mentor character and also teaching her airbending. She is friended by two brothers, and their names are Mako or Mako. I'm not really sure how you're supposed to pronounce it. But Mako and Bolin, who are benders in this pro-bending tournament. The central conflict in the series is being revealed that there's a movement to stop elemental bending altogether, and everyone has to be equal. And of course, Korra and her team being benders, you would think that they'd probably have a problem with that. So I'm sure that more of the story will be revealed as the series continues, but that's pretty much a general overview of the story, at least. And one of the things that you'll notice immediately about Legend of Korra is that it has a female lead character, which if you didn't know already know by the name, you know, she is a young woman, which it's extremely rare for a cartoon that is primarily action based. Mostly what you see for female characters are supplements to the main hero male character, or she's a wife to the husband who's the main character. And other stuff like pixies and ponies and princesses, things that are obviously marketed to girls, and they definitely have their place in the Toonscape, no doubt about that. But what speaks to me personally is something that is meant to be its own thing, creative and memorable, and not necessarily to sell merchandise. This puts Korra and other cartoons like it in the same vein as a live-action film and worthy of the same respect. And I guess that I guess what I'm saying is that you can have a dominant female lead and still sell a cartoon. Moving on to the artwork, you'll notice a little bit of a sound difference there because I'm recording these at a couple of different times. But moving on to the artwork, the designs, the colors, the background, all of it is absolutely incredible. They use a really painterly style. So it's incredibly detailed and it has a high level of quality. And it really helps to bring you into the world of Avatar. They also use quite a bit of 3D, but it doesn't take away from the experience. The city where it's set in is called Republic City. Republic City uses a lot of earth tones in their color palette, and it really helps blend the 2D and the 3D together, so it doesn't look like there's this deep contrast between something that was, you know, designed by hand and then something that was designed, you know, using 3D animation or 3D models. And this is easily one of the top animated series on the air for visual quality. I would argue that this is maybe on the level of a feature film. And then moving on to the animation is just, it's excellent. They take the time to put in these subtle actions and gestures. You know, time is of the essence when you really want to do an animated series. So when you take subtle things like a gesture or facial expression that really doesn't have any audio to accompany it, you know, sometimes people tell you to cut that sort of thing out because time is money. But with Legend of Korra, they take that extra step to include those subtle things to take it to the next level, which means that if you look away, you might miss a funny action. There's some cartoons that I can watch, and at the same time, I'll be playing a game or, you know, work on something on the computer and still be able to keep up with what's going on. I can't do that with Legend of Korra because some of the subtle things help tell the story. They continue the anime influence that made the original series so unique as well. So it's cool to see a well-done fusion between Eastern and Western animation styles. One thing that I did kind of worry about is the amount of technology that they have. We see what would be the equivalent of 1920s and 1930s technology with cars and radios and industry. In the original Last Airbender series, they had gone thousands upon thousands of years with a lack of major technology. I mean, they had tanks and zeppelins and trains and stuff, but those were powered by benders. In Legend of Korra, they take the bending element out of it and go all technology. Now, with that, I kind of contradict my own argument because that's part of what this new story is based on. The conflict is that they want to take bending out of society and make everybody equal. So I guess it makes a little bit of sense in that way. I wanted to see a little bit more progression into the technology instead of going right over into it. But I do understand that they wanted to make this different from the last series. And it's not like, you know, we're going to the place where we are in technology in real life. They get a pass for that. It's just a little tiny gripe from my end. I want to close the therapy session by briefly talking about Korra's role as a female protagonist. She is very much a dominant, girl power, I don't need nobody's help type of woman. And from the little that I've read and people that I've talked to, it's kind of a mixed reception from male to female. It doesn't go from good to bad or anything like that, but it kind of goes from good to okay. See, for the guys, the character profile stays generally the same for action cartoon. The lead is going to be some sort of macho, cocky jerk, but he has a soft side for the ladies. You know, throw in some huge explosions and there you go. You just made a character that appeals to guys. And sometimes that same character will also appeal to women because some women like a tough guy with some swagger. You can see for yourself, one, by asking your girlfriend, and two, by going through a few of the action cartoons and comparing the similarities. Creating a female character that appeals to women, however, it's a little bit different. Women have very different likes and sensibilities, meaning that they will like and dislike characters for totally different reasons. Some women like Korra because of her girl power, but others not so much. And I think it comes down to who they can relate to on a personal level and if they have characteristics similar to their own. I'll compare a few other leading female characters. One is Kim Possible. She is strong, she kicks butt, independent, but she still has that girl appeal because she shops, she's boy crazy, and she's a cheerleader. So they wrote her with appeal in just about all general areas. Other female characters include Gwen from Ben 10 and Ahsoka from Clone Wars. They have more of a supplemental role, I think, though Ahsoka does have her girl power moments, but they really are the softer side of their male jerk character. So what's really happening here is that they're appealing to more of the emotional side of women, which they probably can connect with more than the female lead who doesn't cater to the usual girl stuff and who kicks butt the same way that a guy does. Examples of those type of characters would be like Astrid from How to Train Your Dragon and Merida from the upcoming Pixar film Brave. So all of this really, that whole discussion could really be a podcast within itself. And it really is a larger conversation that I don't have time to go into. Plus, I need a couple of women on the panel to help have a balanced conversation about this. I wanted to touch on it briefly by what I've seen from friends and from the fan sites and the forums. You know, I'm sure that Korra's character will continue to develop and be awesome to everybody. I mean, because it's still early. You know, we don't know exactly where they're going to go with this. And, you know, it wouldn't be called character development if you were able to label the character from the very first episode. That's all I got for today, folks. Thanks for listening, and I hope you got the help you need to satisfy your cartoon fix. You can keep up with the show by going over to the website, celltherapy.net. That's CELtherapy.net. There you can find tunes and topics that are not discussed on the show, and you can leave a comment. Send me an email over at celltherapymail. That's CELtherapymail@gmail.com. Also, follow Cell Therapy on Twitter, @CellTherapy, and tell me what cartoons you're watching. Big, big thank you to the Alt Animation crew for letting me do this. And you can do me a little favor by heading on over to altanimation.podomatic.com. That's altanimation.podomatic.com. And showing the podcast Alt Animation some love, leave some comments, subscribe, all of that good stuff, because they are awesome. And thanks again to everyone for listening. And be sure to join me on the next episode of Cell Therapy.